The writer, producer, and director of the project, Jim Friedman, joins us now on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball on the Fan. Jim, good morning, and thanks for being with me.
Ed, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You have a personal connection with Marty Glickman.
Yes. When I was 17, I used to drive into Manhattan with my older brother and watch him produce Marty's radio show on WNEW. By the way, one of the first all-sports call-in shows in the nation. One day I'm sitting in the booth and my brother has to tell Marty that he has to go into the Army Reserves. He's been called up. Marty will need to find another producer. Without missing a beat, Marty pointed directly into the booth at me and said, "Jimmy can do it." And I literally turned around expecting to see another guy named Jimmy sitting there. There wasn't, and for the rest of that year, I produced his show. He taught me how to get the scores off the wires, write them up, schedule commercials, screen calls. Pretty heady stuff for a 17-year-old. I've been doing press this week and telling the story, and people say, was it intimidating at that age working for Marty Glickman? And the answer is absolutely not, because Marty never treated me as a high school kid. He treated me as his producer, and it gave me a professional confidence I have to this very day.
And because of that experience, do you think that through all these years, Marty Glickman deserved something and that this was percolating inside you?
You know, I was a writer in Hollywood for many years, and my writing partner took some time off when she had her second child, and I decided to make this film. And one of the reasons I made it is, you know, when I later went to Washington University and left New York in St. Louis and went to settled in Los Angeles, people say, "What's the best job you ever had?" And I would say so proudly, "When I was 17, I used to work for Marty Glickman producing his radio show." And they would say, "Who's Marty Glickman?" And I was stunned that outside of New York, very few people had heard of him. And I always felt if you know, my film would remedy that and tell his incredible life story and get that out to the public, it would have been a success.
You not only wrote and produced and directed this project for HBO, you also narrated it.
Yes. You know, I wasn't going to narrate the film, and I was going to get some big name to do it. And I learned an important lesson. I was able to get more of myself and my feeling about Marty into the film by narrating it. And one of the things I did to honor him, Marty was about, you know, he did not like verbose announcers. He hated people who talk too much. He used to say, "The only one who tunes in."
Boy, he'd hate this generation, wouldn't he?
Yeah, you know, he said he didn't. The only one who tunes into your broadcast is the broadcaster is the broadcaster's mother, and he wanted.
Perfect.
You know,
I love that.
Isn't that great? He wanted sparse language, so when I wrote the narration, I made sure it was really sparse, and Marty would have approved.
Martin Scorsese is the executive producer. How did he come to become involved with you?
It's almost unbelievable. My film played the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and Ari Emanuel, the head of William Morris Endeavor, read about it, called me up, and asked to see the film. 1 week later, I'm sitting in his office, and he said, "You know who should see this film? Martin Scorsese." And I'm sitting there saying, "You know, if he must, he must. Okay, you know, sounds good to me."
And that Martin, you're talking about that Martin Scorsese?
Yeah, that's how I felt. 2 days later, I received an email from Marty saying that he loved the film and wanted to release it through his company on HBO. So it was pretty much a typical Tuesday in my life.
Oh, yeah, like everyone. Yeah, of course it was. Jim Friedman is with us. He has written, produced, and directed and narrated a documentary on the great Marty Glickman, which appears tomorrow night for the first time on HBO at 9 o'clock. And I wanted to have you on to talk about a part of Marty's life that none of us knew about, and that's baseball. This is the baseball show. He did recreations before enlisting in the Marines to serve in World War II. How did that come to be? Tell us his baseball history.
It was called Today's Baseball, and he credits that with teaching him how to be a broadcaster, because for your listeners, Ronald Reagan also did this, by the way.
WHO in Des Moines, Iowa. He did Chicago Cubs recreations.
You know more than me, Ed. And what it was is they got the scores off the wire. The wire was like, how would you explain the wire to your listeners?
It was the way in which information was transmitted, and a lot of time it would come on a ticker tape back then, because I did recreations in the 70s in AAA. My owner was too cheap to have me accompany the ball club to the teams in the other division, Tucson, Phoenix, Albuquerque, Salt Lake. So I sat in a studio at KHQ Radio in Spokane, Washington, recreating the game off a ticker. So please continue.
Yeah, that's great. So what it was is that off a ticker, you would get the recap of what happened in every inning. So it might say, like if it were today and it was the Yankees, Jeter pops up to second base, Rodriguez strikes out looking, and Grandison hits a double to left. But that's all it would say. So the broadcaster
and it's interesting,
had
by
free
the way, that you, it's interesting, by the way, that in this, what's going on right
Rodriguez
now, that you have Rodriguez striking out. But I
think that was probably subconsciously a truthful moment in my view of that whole thing. But so the broadcaster could make it the most exciting strikeout in the history of baseball. He could make the double, you know, off the left field wall. The guy just makes it into second. You literally had to recreate the excitement for the audience. And Marty was so successful at this that listeners would, you know, these were games played in the afternoon, and then they would run a 15-minute recap of it that night that he recreated. Listeners were so excited to listen to him, they would deliberately stay away from the score all day long, which back then was a lot easier than it would be today, by
right.
the way, without internet. And so they could listen to Marty do these broadcasts. And he felt that this was the main thing that taught him, you know, timing and excitement and feeling of how to announce, you know, broadcasting for himself.
I had a little block of wood and a pencil. I still have the pencil many years
ago. That's right. You would do the sound effects,
yeah.
too.
Fly ball center field, and it was really you had to concentrate, because if you forgot the count, you couldn't look up, because all you'd see was your engineer across the glass. You wouldn't see the scoreboard. And I have incredible stories about the days in which I recreated. And Ronald Reagan told the story about how at WHO the tape broke. There was no way of getting the information. And so he's stalling for time and stalling for time. He's got a dog on the field now, and they're chasing the dog. And it was very humorous the way which the president told the story. And then all of this. And then he's got Billy Juergens up at the plate for the and Juergens fouls ball, foul ball, foul ball, foul ball. And then when they actually were able to reestablish communication, they found out that Billy Juergens had popped up on the first pitch.
I would have had a rain delay.
With regard to Marty Glickman wanting to pursue professional opportunities with the Yankees or whomever, did he ever get close to doing Major League Baseball?
Very. First of all, he did the pre- and post-game shows for the Yankees and the Dodgers, and he was a huge New York Giants baseball fan, and before they moved to San Francisco, and so much so that even when he did the Giant and Dodger pregame show, he wore his New York Giant baseball cap.
How unprofessional.
Exactly. So Marty was offered to do New York Giants baseball. I believe it was the very, very early 50s, and he was very interested in doing it because fans have to remember, back then, baseball was it. I mean, football and basketball were nothing compared to what baseball was. Everybody, it was literally America's pastime. And so he negotiated with them, and he had just bought a house. And for him to take the Giants job, he would have actually had to take cut his salary. And because he moved into this house with his family in New Rochelle, he couldn't afford to take the job. So he turned it down. I think he had a minor regret about it. But the truth about Marty Glickman's broadcasting style, he was brilliant at doing a game with movement. basketball, football. And there's no doubt in my mind he would have been a terrific baseball announcer. But his real art came into play with those other sports that had more movement than baseball does.
And he also had a connection, Jim, and in our remaining moments, with Jim Friedman, who has written, produced, and directed a documentary about Marty Glickman that appears tomorrow night for the first time at 9 o'clock on HBO. He had a connection with Jackie Robinson because both had experienced discrimination. Jackie's, of course, very well known. Marty, maybe not quite as much, because it was a decade earlier in 1936 when he was not allowed to run in the Olympics because he was Jewish.
Yes. Do you want me to tell that story?
Very quickly. Sure.
Yes. In 1936, it was the Nazi Olympics in Berlin. Adolf Hitler was espousing the myth of Nazi Aryan supremacy. He was watching all of these black athletes dominating the games, and the American relay, the 400-meter relay with two Jewish runners, Marty Glickman and Sam Stoller, was supposed to be the next race. And many people believe that the head of the U.S. Olympic Committee, Avery Brundage, who was later proven to be a Nazi sympathizer, removed the two Jewish runners in order to appease Hitler so he wouldn't have to watch two Jews standing on the winning podium. By the way, 2 years after the Olympics in 1938, when the Nazis were building the German embassy in Washington, D.C., they awarded the construction contract to Avery Brundage's company.
Hmm. And as I said in the premise to my question, he saw a connection with Jackie Robinson.
Yes, very much so. He was very close with Jackie. In fact, Jackie's older brother, Mac Robinson, was on that 36 Olympic team with Marty.
Jim Friedman has written, produced, and is the narrator of Glickman, which will appear tomorrow night on HBO at 9 o'clock, paying tribute to the great Marty Glickman, who was a mentor to so many people in our business, one of the gods of the business of broadcasting. He changed the way sports was called, period, end of story. Jim, congratulations on this, and thank you for being with me.
Ed, thank you. And if fans want to follow more about it, they can follow me on Twitter at Glickman the Film, Facebook Glickman the Film, and my website, GlickmanTheFilm.com. They'll see clips of the film, pictures of Marty, and stories. And I really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure, and I do as well. Jim Friedman for us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.